It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You like that Mike Tyson era, Lennox Lewis?
It was rough. Like, yeah. You know what? We could get busy in a press conference. I'm that sort of person. You know what I mean? Like that.
Hello and welcome to another episode. Yes, it's episode 4 of Fight Club with me, Gareth and Avis. Joining me today in studio, number 11 ranked WBO heavyweight prospect, Big D, David Adelaide. And on the Zoom, we're joined by world trainer Joe Gallagher, Tasha Jonas, of course, Callum Smith and others amongst his charges. And also the sports lawyer, Stephen Taylor Heath, who talked to us about the complexities of heavyweight boxing contracts and the situation involving Conor Benn, UKAD, and those two clomiphene tests, which have turned a new corner. All that and more coming up on this week's Fight Club. Welcome to Fight Club, episode 4. I'm delighted to say he's straight out of West London. It's Big D, David Adelaide. He's here in the studio. How are you, big man?
Good. And I'm healthy.
That's good.
Yeah.
Hands good.
Hands always good. I'm always ready for a tear up. Always. You know, I'm good. I can't complain. How are you?
I'm very good. I've got to read about a bit of history about you. David Bankole Adelaide.
Yeah.
16th of November, 1996, Wee. You were born. You're the son of Nigerian mum and dad who came to the UK. Why did they come to the UK? Did they come for economic reasons? Did they
better
come?
Life.
Better life. Work?
Yeah, better life. They came in all young. They came in there was younger than I was. So they came in there early stages of their life. All my siblings born there.
You know, how many siblings have you got?
I've got two brother, one sister. I'm the baby of the house. I'm the biggest, but I'm the youngest. So it's funny because my mum's always talking to people about me. My mum's always described me as the baby of the house. Like, look, this is my baby. And then boom, you get me that walk through the door, 6'5". People are like, that's the baby. Look at the size of him. She's like, yeah, he's the youngest. You know, no one expects me to walk through the door, but. Yeah, it's a blessing because, you know, to your parents, you're still a little kid. So
always.
Always.
You always will be. And they see their baby, giant man that he is, 245, 250 yep. pounds, 6'5", stepping into a ring against other giant human beings. They must worry about you.
Yeah. My mum, she hates watching boxing. She used to love watching boxing with my dad. Her and my pops used to watch boxing all the time. And then when I started boxing, she said she couldn't watch it anymore because... when she sees the sort of punishment people get, she just thinks, that's the sort of punishment people got to go through. So she don't watch it no more. But she tunes into my fights and whatnot, though, every now and again. And I think she watches the fights after they've happened, after she knows everything's good. She usually tunes in and watches it.
They never wanted you to box. They wanted you to do university, but you got your degree, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to do both. You know, I come from a traditional household. With me, I started boxing at a young age anyways, but they just thought, yeah, it's good discipline. I don't think they ever thought anything long-term-wise, like longevity, like, well, is he going to become a professional athlete? You know, it doesn't cross their mind. It's just, yeah, he's boxing. Same when you have kids that do football, like Sunday league, you don't ever think, damn, they might make it, you know, to the prem.
But secretly in your head, were
in
you
my
going,
head, I knew I was going to
You just knew. Right from a young age, yeah?
From a young age. I'm talking, like, in real young. I knew it was going to happen. I used to tell them as well. And, yeah, they started to kind of see things. And I started doing well in the amateurs. And then, like, you got to stick to it. You know, my mum's calling me, like, have you gone training? You know, my pops are doing the same. So it was a funny little, you know, turn of events. I went from them thinking, bloody hell, make sure you get your education to, have you been training? Have you been training? Have you been training? But, yeah, I wanted to do education as well, so.
What did you do?
Business management.
Do you like business? Could you go into that? Has it helped you in some ways as well?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I did business and law in college.
Mm.
I was going to do commercial law in uni.
Mm.
But I thought, oh, I don't know, because I don't forget, one of my teachers told me you've got to do it for 3 years. You've got to be tuned in, you know, you've got to like it. I don't know if I'm going to like the commercial law, so I just stuck to doing business management, and yeah, I loved it. It wasn't hard. I don't want to say, like, in an arrogant way, but it was, how did you juggle the two? But it was easy, you know. I've been in education my whole life. I've been boxing my whole life, so for me, it was the norm, you know. I'm doing it too, so.
It might come into play later on as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm good with business.
Mm.
Yeah, I know how to do it all, so. I have to do contracts. I have to do all of that.
I think there's something with all fighters as well that, like you say, that calling you felt from a young age, where you just know your body needs it. Exactly. Like you can suffer with mental health if you don't have it. If you don't get a sweat on, if you're not getting those endorphins from that every day, mm-hmm. You know, you'll probably leave here today and you'll want to do something 100%, every day.
100%. You know, I'm an active person, and I like going through workouts.
Mm.
I just like boxing. I'm a fan of the sport. A lot of people ain't fan of the sports, but, you know, I'm a fan of the sport. You know, there's certain fights that happen and I want to tune in. I'm keeping up to date with, you know, the build-ups to the fight. I'm still studying the fight, you know, so, yeah, I'm a fan of the sport. And like, I knew without sounding cocky, I knew I was going to be here anyway, so it was all right. I already envisioned it, you know. Nothing's really new to me, even if it's the first time I'm doing it.
You're also true to your roots on your left arm there,
yeah,
West London, Portobello Road. I mean, I used to often go down Portobello, All Saints Road when I was younger. There was a lot of reggae going on. There was a lot of, it was quite Jamaican at the time when I was younger. I'm talking, oh my God, like a couple of years after you were born.
Broken.
The 40s, yeah, exactly, yeah, exactly. I am about 100. But in those days, it was it was very West Indian,
yeah.
British West Indian. Portobello Market.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was cool.
Bob
I mean,
Marley
it still is.
Go down there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I know Bob Marley was known for going
yeah.
there. It's got a lot of, it's got a big West Indian community. Now it's kind of diversified a bit.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of like walking cultures. There's a lot of Africans. Labrador is one of them areas, man. It's got so many different people.
Yeah.
Different backgrounds there. Nah.
But you're true to your roots. Yeah,
no, I'm true to my roots. I'm a Labrador boy. You know, I'm born and bred.
You boxed in Dale Youth as an amateur. Was that in that tiny little chapel where you can only fit a ring about the width of the studio? Did you move to the other place?
Yeah, he was. there was one that was in the Grenfell building, but there was one that was like around the corner from him. So yeah, it was there about 15 years ago, 13 years ago. So that's the one I started in.
I remember because going to see James DeGale and George Groves in that place when they were like 10.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was literally, they didn't like each other then. Yeah. And it was literally a ring about the size of this room. That's the width of the Chapel of Rest. Yeah. I don't know if you ever went in there.
No, it
was so narrow.
Been inside it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how small it was, but yeah, I know everyone was talking about it.
What was his name, Mick?
Mick Hennessy.
No, Mick.
Mick Delaney.
Mick Delaney. Is he still with us?
Yeah.
He is still with us.
Yeah.
What a great guy.
Yeah.
How many kids he's trained, you know? Over the years in Dale Youth.
Yeah, he's had a lot. You know, he did a lot of the seniors. I stayed with my amateur coach. So yeah, you know, I said barbecue coach Gary.
Gary McGuinness, yeah.
Gary McGuinness, yeah. He was my guy, you know. He showed me the ropes and we had a good connection, so I just didn't even want to switch coaches. So I ended up staying with him for the whole of my amateurs. Yeah, he worked wonders for me. So
Dillian White was in trouble as a kid. Derek Chisholm was in trouble as a kid. Anthony Joshua was in trouble as a kid. Were you ever in trouble?
I used to get caught up in a few mix-ups. It seems to be the norm where I'm from. You know, I mean, it's the norm. If you didn't grow up in trouble, then yeah, that wasn't normal. So yeah, I put my parents through it a lot of the times, man. All of these, I had a lot of cases going on and whatnot. So I used to get in trouble all the time. But
what was that? Was that mainly fighting, or was it?
Yeah, the majority of the
gangs,
time,
or
the majority of the time was just like mainly fighting and whatnot.
Yeah,
I'll tune in. I mean,
you wouldn't back down. I take it. Are you the kind of person? Imagine, you know,
nobody.
No.
I saw somebody said something like, why does Dave Asley think he's so bad?
No, we're going to come to that. Are you a bad man being good?
A lot of people told me I act subdued on the camera. I act laid back. And if a lot of people think I'm acting laid back. The people that know me saying I'm acting laid back, then. And the people at home that don't know me think I'm acting bad. They ain't seen nothing yet. So it's just, I ain't acting bad, mate. I'm in a violent sport. If I play tennis, then I'd understand it, but I'm in a violent sport. And I don't act no way. I just be myself. I'm not going to go. I don't have no bloody problems. I have no enemies or whatnot. But I'm just me. Don't back down from nobody. So, yeah, some people don't like it. Some people can't seem to fathom it. It's for them, right? You know, I live my life, they can live theirs. It is what it is.
We got a ton of questions for you from the viewers today, but do you think, on that note, finally, did being involved in boxing, when you look back on it now, you're only 26, aren't you? Mm-hmm. When you look back on it now, back to 16, 15, 14, when we don't know at that age. We don't know. We're fearless, but we're out there and we don't know that we can back out facing sometimes if we have to win the war, but maybe not win that battle. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You learn that as you get older, don't you?
You learn that when you get older, you know.
But did boxing perhaps keep you out of serious trouble? The fact you had boxing, yes, and respect, and you knew that you had that arc of boxing in your life and people like Kevin McGuinness?
Yes, I know. I mean, of course, Gary McGuinness was...
Gary McGuinness, sorry. Yeah.
Gary was... He played a vital part for me. You know, he came to court for me and whatnot, like when I was an amateur. But yeah, we'll say that story for another day. But like, yeah, he helped me a lot. But boxing did help me. But at the same time, it's like I used it because I knew how to have a dust up. You know, I need to have a tear up. So
we need mixed martial arts boxing in our society, don't we?
Yeah,
under license, under rules, under because it. It gives those people who are gonna fight no matter what it is.
Exactly.
You're not under the influence when you're doing it. You're not doing it on the cobbles. You're not, people's heads aren't being banged against railings and concrete.
Exactly that. And you can actually probably be in a violent breakdown, but who knows? That's neither here nor there. I feel like the way I grew up was good. Because I grew up and it wasn't really, I mean, it was pretentious, but it wasn't the way it is now. You know, you could wear pair of Nikes and be seen as a fresh kid. Whereas now it's like, you see the young generation wearing stuff that you don't know they're breaking the bank for when they're young. So it's like, you're probably asking your parents for that money, or you might be spending it yourself, but you have to save up for it, you know. The younger generation are getting old. They're never really young anymore, you know. You got
old before their time, maybe.
Exactly that. A lot of the young people just acting way too old. So it's like, they've got to be young because they're going to get old and wish they were younger.
As you grow, as your resonance grows within boxing and within the sporting landscape, do you want to be a role model for youngsters?
Being me.
Okay, but being you, but
yeah, like me,
David,
me,
every
me.
Time I've known you, you've got, you can laugh at yourself. I've teased you about the size of your fantastically small ears.
Yeah,
they're very cute ears. No, but you're not so proud that you can't have a giggle at yourself either.
Oh,
I've always found you a man who carries himself properly,
definitely.
Who's enriched by what he's doing, who's deeply invested in his sport.
Definitely.
and is proud of who he is and what he is, you know, that I don't see you any other way.
100% I am who I am, you know, and I can only be me. You know, that's why I say, if people was like, oh, Dave, are you this or you that? It's like, listen, I'm just being me. If they like it, they like it. And if they don't, they don't. But the only thing I can do is be myself. You know, I get a lot of messages of people saying I look up to him and whatnot, and it's humbling because I didn't join this game thinking about that.
It's going to happen more and more.
Yeah, then I use that saying. I went from being a bad example to setting an example. You know, growing up, and I remember everyone used to be like, don't be like this guy, and, you know, he's bad, and he's this. And now everyone's like, man, look at him, changed his life around. He was in this position, he was in that, he's doing this, he's doing that. You know, so I suppose I could be a role model for them. But yeah, I'm being me. I let people make their mistakes. One thing my dad always taught me was, my dad used to always see me and kind of see what I was doing wrong and whatnot, but he wouldn't really want to correct me because he'd rather see me make my mistakes. You know, sometimes when you're shutting doors on people, they will still want to kick it down. It's like, you know what? Give him the key, let him go into that room. And then when he sees that he shouldn't have done that, he's going to come out and know not to go into other rooms that are shut. You know, so like that's what my pops was kind of doing, just, you know, letting me get in trouble.
Then you have your own journey.
Let me have my own journey.
The rite of passage of leaving the village to become a man, to exactly and then come that. Out, you know?
Exactly that, you know. So, yeah, I went through a lot. I didn't go through a lot like that. Like, I grew up in a good household.
My mum. It shows.
Yeah. I grew up with manners, mum and dad.
Yeah, yeah.
I went on my holidays with my family. My dad was buying me latest kicks. I had a pedal bike. My brother had a PlayStation. So I did bad on my own. They've done a good job, but you know, sometimes you can give a kid everything, but he still wants to go out. Then it's like, what are you doing it for? You've got everything at home.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's where they were more sometimes confused, but at the same time, it's like they started to really understand that you got to let a kid be a kid sometimes. You know, let him be free.
You won multiple titles as an amateur. You're 12-0 with 11 knockouts. You've had a couple of tests already in your career. We'll come to the questions in a minute. Fabio Wardley is a guy people are talking about you a lot. And Fraser Clark, even though that you guys know each other very well. Dillian White, Derek Chisora, Johnny Fisher may be chasing you at the moment. What are the frustrations that you have in boxing, if there are any?
People don't want to fight each other.
Why is that?
Because they see what promoter. I saw something with Eddie Hearn the other day, and it was like Eddie Hearn's talking about, why don't we get, he was talking about his prospects, how don't we get them on, why don't we get them on right now for a brilliant fight? Let's just do it. Like, and then he starts talking about, why is boxing like this? And I was thinking, he's one of the reasons. Eddie Hearn will get two prospects fighting each other, and then one of his prospects will lose, will drop that prospect, and then keep going. And then, so a lot of fighters will see Eddie and be like, oh, Eddie might do that. Whereas, you don't care, mate. Let's go for it. It is what it is. A fight's a fight. I've had many of them. You know what I mean? I know some people can come up short. God forbid it won't ever be me, though. But, you know, I understand that. You know, I remember I knocked out some of my opponents and he was upset. And I told him, man, you know what I mean? He lost to a good fighter, my friend. Don't worry about it. You know, I was always.
Did he lose to a future world champion?
He did. Exactly that. So it was kind of understandable. I told him, like, hold your head up. So a lot of these fighters don't want to do that because they think, oh, my days, you know. It's the Mayweather effect, you know. Mayweather's retired undefeated and whatnot. It's just, yeah.
Is the bad guy being good right now? Or is he the good guy being bad right now? I'm going to make him bad when we mention some of these things.
Go on.
The weekend. I want to ask you about the weekend. Arslan Bek Makhmudov defeated Rafael Akbajouri, and Jared Anderson defeated Charles Martin, both on a top rank card in Toledo, Ohio. I think for me, Arslan Bek looks very talented. 6'5½", 20 odd stone, big Russian guy, good amateur pedigree, 17-0, got rid of Akbajouri in a couple of rounds. He looks like a great prospect. He's, I say, number 5 of the WBC. I can see him getting a world title shot next year. We don't know truly how good he is, but he's been stopping guys and knocking guys out on the way. Very relaxed about his skills. Have you seen much of him?
Yeah, I see him. Looks like a good fighter. He just looks like he's got a bit of strength to him. Swings a lot, but he gets the job done.
Yeah.
I saw that fight on the weekend with him and Rafael, and yeah, he looked like Rafael looked like he got stuck in the mud, mate.
He
looked like
he was undefeated going into that.
Yeah, he was, but it looked like the, you know, the lights got to him.
Yeah.
You know, a day in the headlights.
Yeah.
He went out there from 1-1 and his feet looked stuck. He let
Makhmudov.
Yeah, Makhmudov just let his hands go on him.
Yeah.
Kind of just froze up. I know that Makhmudov because I knew him from a while back. I remember he fought Takam, he fought Wallish.
Erkan Tepe.
Yeah, exactly. And he'll stop him. I think
Maris Vak, he
stops him as well.
Six,
I think Takam's the only person he never stopped.
He did 10 rounds with him, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, he was a good fighter. I saw some of that Rafael guy before. I think I first heard of him about
Akpajuri, yeah.
Yeah, about 12 months ago. I saw him. He didn't really look the greatest, but he's a big boy, so.
6'7½, Nigerian.
Yeah, exactly.
But he got stopped, so Makhmudov advances. What did you think of Jared Anderson?
Good performance he did.
Against Charles Martin.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
He overcame some adversity. He did the 10 rounds, no problem. Showed some grit. You know, he had to bite down on the gum shows a few times. And he knew how to still survive. He's slippery, you know, he was working and stuff. It was a good fight. Fair play to Charles Martin. He did that on 10 days' notice.
He did.
And he was inactive for 10 months. So God knows how he was training.
Thing is about Charles, everyone looks at that performance against Anthony Joshua.
Yeah.
Way back when, 6-7 years ago. And says, well, he's nothing. But he has come back. He wasn't mentally right for that fight. Lost the IBF title to Joshua. But Joshua at the time was just a guy walking in, letting his hands go, wasn't he? With no fear at all.
Exactly. Joshua's a big puncher too. Obviously, Jared don't have that power that Joshua has.
Smaller heavyweight.
Exactly.
Jared, yeah. Do you think he's being talked up a little bit too much?
He's a good fighter. You know, they clearly back him.
Yeah.
So he's going to be someone.
Makhmudov, Anderson, Martin, Joshua, targets for you down the line?
Most definitely.
All of them?
All of them.
No one's outside the reach yet?
No. I mean, with the way that we're going, right? You know, their path's like this, my path's like this. You know, if it keeps going in the right direction, we're going to meet each other.
Mm.
Obviously, the Joshua's or whatnot, my path's like this, Joshua's path's like this, so we're probably going to miss each other.
Yeah. And Fury, probably, maybe Fury. And Usyk.
Yeah. And
Wilder.
Yeah, they're all too old. And I like them, to be fair, man. I look at Joshua and Fury like big bros, so that's why I don't ever go out there and diss them, because I'm too real to do that.
I know you're very honest about it as well, that you're not there yet. I'm not there yet. You know, at the level to fight them, the experience to fight them.
Exactly. And like I said, man, I look up to them as well. Like, they do a lot in this sport. Same thing with Joshua. He done a lot for British boxing, man, in his time, because he carried the sport on his back by himself. So it wouldn't make no sense for me to start dissing him. And especially when I respect him as a man. Like I said, I look at him like big balls. I text him. So it wouldn't make no sense. I want to come on that and start, you know, insulting him.
Well, he's there for you for advice right now. Definitely. You have gone in, I think, is it 150 rounds of sparring you've done with Tyson Fury?
Yeah.
Good fun. Great learning experience.
A lot of learning experiences. And, I mean, the man's one of the best in the world, right? You know, I'm a prospect coming up. So getting them sort of rounds in with him, he clearly sees something in me that, you know, that he appreciates and respects. So,
do you learn a lot from that? Yeah, is he talks. Awkward? Is he as awkward as they he say is. He is?
He's probably more awkward than they say he is. You know, I mean, you're with him and like, Tyson talks, you can ask questions, you know, we have conversations.
While you're sparring?
No, no, afterwards.
It wouldn't surprise me.
But like, there's times, and obviously I'm in the gym, no one's in the gym, you're chilling, and you know, when you're around somebody for that long, you start to pick up on them, and you start to what they're like. So Tyson knows what I'm like. I know what he's like. You know, it's just how it is.
Is it disappointing that we are at this kind of impasse at the moment, where they're all obviously waiting for big money from Saudi or waiting to create their own rhythms? If Fury and Usyk meet? Can you pick a winner?
Usyk's very good though. He's 6'9", just got the attributes and he's got the, you know, the IQ as well as Usyk does. I just see Fury.
Fury Joshua,
good fight, of course, because they're both. See, this is the thing. Fury's skillful, awkward, high IQ. Joshua's strong, bangs hard. You know,
so it's a fight we've got to see, isn't it? A
fight that the public want to see.
Yeah,
I wish it happened. Before Joshua fought Usyk.
Yeah.
And it was meant to happen. And then obviously Fury got taken to court with Wilder.
Yeah.
So they announced that rematch. And then Fury and then Joshua had to go and fight Usyk. But I wish it happened back then.
What happens if Fury and Wilder step into... Usyk and Wilder step into a ring together.
That's a good fight.
I've got Wilder winning that. Getting to Usyk that. Eventually.
I say, because Usyk will do the tippy-tappy stuff. And I just see Wilder landing one of them and sending them over. No, that'll be a good fight for as long as it lasts.
What about Joshua and Wilder?
Good fight too. I used to say back in the day, everyone used to ask and I'm like, it depends on how the fight starts. You know, it depends on that. You know, Joshua can go up there and just put it on him and, you know, have him on the back foot. You know, kind of have him stunned. He doesn't know how to throw his right hand, don't find his range. Wilder can come out big, big, strong, letting his hands go. And, you know, Joshua might not be able to move out of the way for it. So it's a good, good, good fight.
What a tragedy if we don't see all these fights in this era. Because you can feel the excitement.
Race going, you might not see it.
No, maybe only 3 of 6 of those.
I was just about to say that.
You know,
you won't see all of them, probably not. But it'll be good to see it. It will be a good fight. It would be like the White against Wilder 2. That'll be a good fight. So yeah, there's a lot of fights up there that a lot of
White and Joshua 2, you mean?
No, White and Wilder.
Oh, White and Wilder 2. Oh, I see. Yeah, two, as well as...
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
God, I'd love to see that.
Yeah. So,
I think Wilder beats most people.
Yeah, you know,
I think
he does.
Gets them in the end.
I think Wilder's definitely up there, one of the heaviest punches we've ever had in the history of boxing. He's got to be up there. He's got to be the proof is in the pudding. He hits people and they go over. So,
what happens when Wardley faces Adelaide in the ring?
Wardley gets knocked out.
All right, but hold it there. We're coming back with lots of questions for Big D after this. Well, I'm delighted to announce the debut appearance, not with me, but on Fight Club, of Stephen Taylor Heath, the head of sports law at JMW Solicitors, a very revered and senior figure in world sports law, not just here in the UK. Stephen, a very warm welcome to you to Fight Club.
Good morning, Gareth. How are you?
I'm very good. Now, you look like you're in a panelled boardroom, but I understand you might have been swinging clubs at a small white ball in the last few days.
Yeah, I'm actually at Ilkley Golf Club in the billiard room because I'm taking place in the over 55 Yorkshire Seniors. Now I'm old enough. I'm playing with people my own age.
You're not over 55. Come on.
I am indeed.
Come on, what do you play off then? Have you got a handicap you play off?
4, but that gives the impression I don't do enough work, so...
4? You must play a lot of golf.
No, I just don't play very much, so I can keep my handicap low.
Wow. And playing off 4, does that mean you're up for the prizes today?
No, we're nowhere near the prize table today, I can assure you of that, Gareth. Otherwise, I wouldn't be taking part in this interview.
I bet you're spitting blood at your teammates, because I know how competitive you are, having spoken to you a couple of times.
It's the taking part that counts, of course,
Gareth. Yeah. Look, you've been very formidable in sports law itself, within football, within boxing, You know, you've been involved with Anthony Joshua in the past, with Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua, legal contracts with Queensbury, with the Boxing Board of Control, very formidably placed within the sport. And I want to ask you as a generic question, compared to other sports, Stephen, is sports law in boxing more complex than many other sports?
I'm not sure if it's more complex. I think that it's certainly a sport where experience is very important, because the politics that are involved in boxing, obviously all lawyers have a duty of confidentiality to their clients, so I'm not talking about any specifics, but you've got obviously the governing bodies that are self-appointed, you've got the athletic commissions, you've got the boxing board, you've got the stakeholders, the broadcasters. So it's knowing the political landscape that's involved in sport, not just the regulatory side. And of course, boxing does have a fairly unique contractual matrix to it with options agreements and the like. So, you know, it's certainly a sport that's complex insofar as you can't read the answers really in a textbook. You have to basically just dip your toe in the water and get some experience in the sport in order to be able to advise on from a legal point of view.
So it's almost that study of case law in a sense.
It's not so much case law, because there's not much case law in relation to how a court would interpret a promotional agreement, for example, or taking the governing bodies to court. It's understanding the framework of the sport and how all the, as I say, the stakeholders fit together, and that if you fall out with one party somewhere down the line, that could have repercussions elsewhere. So when you're advising, this is the contractual position, you also have to have in mind what the knock-on effect of taking a stand on that particular point is, for example. And when I'm dealing with contracts, quite often I deal with the same lawyers on the other side of the table, and they're experienced lawyers like myself. And it makes it fairly straightforward to deal with the contract, because they almost know the points I'm going to make. Then I know the points they're going to make, and we can get the contracts done. And obviously you're dealing with lawyers from other jurisdictions as well, yet the governing bodies' rules and regulations have to apply pan-jurisdiction. And so you have local rules and regulations. So, you know, if you're talking about doping, for example, you've got athletic commissions with their rules and regulations, you've got the governing bodies with their rules and regulations, you've got WADA, UCAD, and you've got the boxing commissions. So you have to have an understanding of all the different pieces of the jigsaw.
When we're all pontificating out here, boxing writers and broadcasters, and the fans are getting frustrated with this contract's going to be signed, particularly in the heavyweight division where it's massive money, certainly at the moment for the top 5, 6, 7, 8 fighters. When we're all going, why can't the fight just be signed? Is it much more layered and complex than that with, for example, at the moment with the Saudi Arabian skills challenge involved and Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua having contracts, and Tyson Fury and whoever it be, Anthony Joshua and his opponents, is it much more complex than, because fighters will say, oh, no, there's this to be sorted and that's to be sorted. Promoters will say there's still places to go with it all. And we all just think, come on, guys, just sign on the dotted line. Is it almost like bringing two big national companies together when you get some of these big fights on?
Well, you certainly have to take into consideration several moving parts. So you've got the broadcasters, you've got the fighters. The fighters will have their own legal representation. The promoters have their own legal representation. You've got the governing bodies. You've got other governing bodies that are relevant to it. You've got the people that are putting the money up. There's other factors you've got to take into account, other sporting events that might clash and things like that. In terms of, as I say, the actual contracts and what have you, the contract for a large sporting event is not that different to if you're putting on any form of a large sporting event or even a music festival or something like that. You know, the legal parameters around putting a large event on involve a venue, negotiations with that venue and what have you. It's easy, of course, if things break down to blame the lawyers and say, oh, they didn't get contract on or whatever. I mean, the legal side of it does take time. Obviously, you do have a unique situation where you've got two parties coming together to put on an event. You know, the World Cup event, the Olympics and things like that, they're self-fulfilling prophecies in terms of events. You know what the event's going to be. You can plan for the event. When you've got two promoters trying to organise an event, they are effectively negotiating as to how that event is going to work. And of course, you are always going to want, if you've got two promoters and they're both alpha promoters, as it were, so they both want to have the best position, then of course there's several matters that are going to be discussed when it comes to doing those contracts, and that takes time to negotiate that. If you've got a purse bid situation, then it's slightly different because the promoter that wins the purse bid puts the fight on, and that's a relatively straightforward process. But if you're not in a purse bid process and you're just trying to negotiate, then you have to deal with the issues where both promoters may want to win on particular points.
I think that's the words we use there from our side of the fence is egos and rivalries, but you're not using those because you're so political. You and I spoke a couple of months back, Stephen, about the situation round and about Conor Benn's coming back and fighting with these two cases of clomiphene in his system. Now, the recent evidence being put forward, we understand, to UCAD, UK Anti-Doping, and the Boxing Board of Control for his hearing, which is taking place with them, which they put forward and asked to do in the middle of March, is that the metabolites, this is their latest scientific evidence, as produced and given over to an article in the Times by their chief sports correspondent, Matt Lawton, last week, which is that sports scientists have found that the metabolites involved with that clomiphene are definitely from a food substance, they're claiming, and not a pill, which seems to exonerate him in lots of ways and fits in with the WBC's findings of a surfeit of eggs that he may have taken during his nutritional factors going into that fight with Chris Eubank last year, which, if anyone has been living under a rock, was cancelled because of these two tests. A very big fight. Eddie Hearn is looking to press on with that fight, saying they could do it in September, noting September the 23rd, maybe Abu Dhabi. They want to do it in the UK if possible. The hearing is imminent, we hear. From your perspective, just commenting as a neutral from outside, has he got an opportunity here if that scientific evidence shows up of, even though the UCAD system is strict liability, of actually getting a receded suspension or ban or none at all?
Yeah, we obviously talked about this in some detail, as you say, a couple of months ago, and I think the main significant change since then is this publication in relation to what the expert evidence may say. But we're still at the same position, really, in terms of the case and liability and now. Yes, obviously that potential charges. One of those charges could relate to a sample which UCAD took. Now, in this particular case, obviously the sample itself wasn't one that UCAD took. It was a VADA test, so it was charged under 2.2. The rules and regulations do provide in 10.6 that you can mitigate the situation by effectively establishing no significant fault or negligence. And one of those grounds is the basis of contamination, that you weren't at significant fault for that finding its way into your system. Now, I believe that there's plenty of study that shows that clomiphene can find its way into eggs because just as it's used as a fertility drug, it's also fed to chickens to increase egg production. So clomiphene can be in, then that could elevate the level to the point where you have a failed test. So if he can establish all of that through expert evidence, and I'm not sure this is necessarily new science, because I had a quick look online and there's like a Reddit article talking about the difference between the signatures of clomiphene in metabolites from effectively supplements and from eggs. So if you establish that evidence, then of course it may well be that a panel will accept what you are saying with regard to how that came into your system. If they do, and they find that there's no significant fault, then of course they can mitigate the suspension and mitigate it down to potentially zero or effectively time served. So you can obviously have a situation where this expert evidence could effectively clean the box in the very near future.
Is that very important, you believe, for this to go forward? I mean, it seems to be, from what Eddie Hearn's been saying in the last few days, that they are very optimistic. I hear that the case hasn't gone before UCAD yet, but is imminent. Can you just describe for those watching and those listening how this tribunal takes place? Because a lot of people don't know. They think Conor Benn's just going to go there with his lawyer and stand before the Boxing Board of Control and UCAD officials, and he will, they will give his case and they will give a summation of what transpires for him from here, or what's gone on in the past, and put out a statement about his name. But it's actually almost like a court case, isn't it? For those that don't know, Stephen, how will the hearing actually take place? What is it, like a court case with a defense team and a judge? How does it effectively take place?
Process has now reached sports resolutions. So sports resolutions are a body that deals with arbitrations in a sporting forum. So sports resolutions will go through their own procedures, which are normal arbitration type procedures, and they can set out directions with regard to the steps that are taken by the parties. So given that expert evidence is so important here, they will have given a direction and a timetable for when Conor Benn's team are to produce their expert evidence. That expert evidence will be considered by UCAD, and UCAD will be given the opportunity to potentially produce their own evidence if they don't accept what that evidence says. Then there is, in theory, a process whereby matters can be dealt with on paper, but more likely there'll be an oral hearing where Conor Benn may be required to attend the oral hearing and give evidence to say with regard to, his ingestion of eggs and what have you, and be answered questions in relation to that. The expert may also be required to attend if UCAD have any questions in relation to their expert evidence. And then the panel, which is an independent panel, will be required to consider the matter. And if they come to a conclusion that what Conor Benn is saying and that the grounds under 10.6 are made out, then that would be a mitigating factor in the in any sanction that might be imposed. Whether he be cleared entirely, have to show no fault or negligence whatsoever. And obviously you have various issues that are taken into account in relation to these types of cases that involve contamination, with regard to an athlete's obligation to be very careful what they're putting into their bodies, and that contamination can occur. So you would normally batch test supplements, for example. You'd have a nutritionist that advises you on your diet, and you would expect that nutritionist to understand, how supplements can be contaminated, but also how everyday foodstuffs that you might take for protein and obviously to as part of your training, how they might be contaminated as well. So those types of issues may be pertinent in the hearing.
So basically, you've got sporting resolutions have the tribunal, and they have a panel which is effectively the judge. Then you have UCAD, who are like the prosecution, if you like, the defence team, Conor Benn and his scientists, his doctors, his lawyers, and so on. And then a resolution. Is it normally done if they come orally to one in one session? And do you think they go away then and consider and come back with their verdict?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you hit the nail on the head there, Gareth, that UCAD become the prosecution. It's not UCAD that are going to decide this particular matter. It's decided under their processes. So UKED have decided that there's a case to be answered, and obviously they publicised back in April, I believe it was, that they'd issued a charge. So they are the prosecutor, and that's a fairly standard process that applies across sports in general. You know, the recent case involving Michael Vaughan and England Cricket Board, for example, the England Cricket Board became the prosecutor, but it was under their rules and regulations. So each sport has a dispute resolution chamber. Sometimes it's an internal dispute resolution chamber. In the case of UKED, the dispute resolution chamber is sports resolutions.
Fascinating stuff. And it sounds like, if they have got the right evidence, that we may indeed see this Conor Benn and Chris Eubank fight this year. I know you, as a lawyer, you can't say yes or no. We're just neutrals. But we all hope that there is some kind of effective and closure resolution on it, because up to this point, till October, it's allowed a lot of grey matter, a lot of grey clouds around the sport, because a testing system for banned substances is so important in an inherently dangerous sport.
Well, it is important. Of course it's important. And, you know, you have to have great sympathy with the with Robert Smith and the British Boxing Board of Control. I mean, Rob's got a significant amount of integrity and he cares greatly about the sport. And, you know, obviously you've got a situation where in doping, you are guilty until proven innocent because you haven't got the time to arrange a hearing to deal with the boxer's explanation for a failed test before most fights. And obviously you wouldn't want a boxer who has failed a test taking part in a fight, even if the other boxer's prepared to fight him. But, yeah, you know, and obviously, so the board has a difficult role. They and so if you're looking at, you know, the repercussions, if in fact Conor Benn is cleared, you'd have to look at a situation where you don't want a boxer getting into the ring if they've failed a test and it's you know, and it's a substance that is banned at any time, for example. So you're not distinguishing between in competition and out of competition, for example. So they have to take a decision. They have to prevent the fight happening. And then, of course, if following all the processes, the boxer clears their name, then, of course, they will be allowed to box in the future. But when you look at how they have suffered in the meantime, in between, you know, you have to look at the fact that there has to be due process. And my personal view as a lawyer is that the lawyers will always argue the corner of the boxer. But, you know, and one thing I'm very clear on in 25 years in being involved in boxing is I certainly don't talk about boxing because I'm certainly no expert about boxing. But I think that whilst the lawyers have a role to play, you should leave it to administrators like Robert Smith to do what they think is best for the boxing at the time. And if a boxer fails a test, they shouldn't be getting in the ring.
Three quick fire questions. Favourite boxer?
My favourite boxer, probably in all the time that I've been watching the sport and people that I've got involved with, I'd probably have to say Joe Calzaghe.
Favourite golfer?
My favourite golfer is probably Nick Faldo, but I know he's not everybody's favourite person.
Which boxer would you like to play a round of golf with?
Well, I have honestly, not name-dropping, well, I am name-dropping, but I have actually had the pleasure of playing golf with Oscar De La Hoya.
And how was he?
And believe it or not, well, he's a lefty, but believe it or not, I played with Oscar De La Hoya and Paco from the WBO.
Paco Balcarcel.
Just very quickly, I played on this golf course in Florida, and you know when you get deja vu and you think I've been there before, but then you're sort of thinking to yourself, well, I can't have ever been here before. Went into the pro shop, and there was a gopher head cover because it's the course at a caddy shack, so that's how I knew where.
That's brilliant. Have you ever had a hole in one?
I've had six, but not for about 10 years.
Six holes in one. Pick out the best hole in one, then.
Well, there was nobody around, so it's like you've only got my word for it.
Go and get a hole in one today. It's been a pleasure to see you as always. Stephen Taylor Heath, an absolute legend. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Bye bye. Bye.
Welcome back to Fight Club here on Boxing Social. Big D, David Adelaide in here with me in the studio in our after hours club. There's no alcohol this week. I didn't want to misbehave with Big D around. Listen, I've got to ask you some questions. And the first one, really, because most people want to see you in the ring with Fabio Wardley.
Yeah.
And one of our questions here is, would you take Fabio Wardley now for the British title? You said you're on your own path instead of Wardley.
Yeah.
Define what that means.
I mean, I got my own trajectory, you know. So I can go and fight good on so many fighters, you know, with more popularity than he has, you know, that put me in rankings and, you know, fights that just actually work with my promoter rather than other fights that won't work with my promoter. Like, I won't get mentioned in them, so I can go my own path now.
Before we went to break, you said you'd knock him out.
Yeah.
Do you visualise that? Yeah. Do you visualise that when you're training? Is he a target in your head right now?
Yeah.
You called him a Muppet on the show with me the other day. Why is that?
He's a Muppet. You know, he's an actress, not an actor. He's an actress. He's not no serious guy. You know, not act like no man. So, he's an actress, man. Everything he does is just acting. It is what it is. You know, the fight happens, it happens. If it don't happen, it don't happen. Like, I generally do not care if the fight don't happen. When I wanted it, it wasn't given to me. And I even was asking, saying that. But before, it was like, nobody mentioned my name with it, so, you know.
You think he's avoiding you, yeah?
No. I'll give him his dues. I don't think he's avoiding me. I think if the fight got made, he'll definitely fight me.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got bottle. To be fair.
So oh, he's terrifically entertaining. I think you and he fighting is an amazingly thrilling prospect.
Yeah, 100%.
And I've mentioned it to you before. Sometimes those fights that Froch and Groves, Carl Froch and George Groves, they had a fight in Manchester. It was a great event for the IBF title. Groves appealed it, thought he was stopped too early. This huge animosity between them for 9 months. They end up fighting at Wembley Stadium and it just explodes. Everybody wants to see it because he put Froch down early as well in that first fight. And 80,000 people go to Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
3 years before Anthony Joshua was doing his thing with Klitschko.
Yeah, Joshua was actually on the undercard.
You don't know. It could be the person you most dislike in the sport whose name is most linked to you at the end that enables you to buy a row of houses on Portobello Road. Yeah. It's weird though, isn't it?
No, you're not lying. You know, Ali Frazier hated each other. And
to their death. I did an interview with Joe Frazier. Absolutely right, yeah. Big D. I did an interview with Joe Frazier when he was in his 70s. And he even said to me then, when Ali had his Parkinson's, I know which one of us is going to heaven and which one's going to hell for all the things he said to me. He couldn't forgive. But a lot of people do forgive and a lot of people do become friends. And you guys, when you go through that tunnel of pain and focus with that other person, you have a bond.
Yeah, because you think about that person so much, don't you?
Especially when you camp. Yeah.
You think about that person so much.
You know? And there's a respect level there.
There's always a certain amount of respect because these are their fighters at the end of the day. So you've got to go in there with a certain amount of respect. 110%, but you know, respect in a different sort of way. But 110%, you've got to give them that sort of respect.
People focus on your Sokolovsky fight, rather. And one of the questions, it was a hard night for you. He made it awkward for you. He's an arch survivor in the ring. He's a very experienced veteran. He's got a ton of losses, but he's able to do the rounds of people. He's a yardstick for some fighters as well. One question we got here is, do you wish you'd rematched Sokolovsky before he retired to clear that mark on your career to date?
I don't think there's a mark on it. I beat the fella, but I wish I rematched him and I would have stopped him.
You're frustrated that night, weren't you?
Yeah, and that way I could sit there and be like, I stopped everyone I've got in there with. I know I've hurt everyone I've boxed. Every single person I've boxed, I've hurt. And I wish I did. The rematch was meant to happen. At first he said he wasn't going to take the rematch, so it was a bit peculiar the way things were brought up later on. He He said he wasn't going to take it. I said, give it to me straight away. So
is that power that you clearly have, is that something that allows you to know that if you get your boxing right, you can deal with anyone? Because heavyweight boxing is about power and knockouts, isn't it?
That's what people want to tune in to see. That's why it's the mecca of boxing.
Yeah.
Because people go in there and they get slept. You know, people want to see it. You know, and I've got the power to knock out anyone. And then it comes across a certain way, but I'm just saying how it is. You know, I don't know what it is. People just ain't used to a certain type of person anymore. I'm supposing they're not like my personality. Maybe I'm like a 90s sort of fighter, you know, that talks.
You like that Mike Tyson era, Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield.
When it was rough, you know what, we could get busy in a press conference. I'm that sort of person. You know what I mean? Like that. You know what I mean? Like you see Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson getting busy, and then if it gets to that, you got to let our hands go. All right, then let's do that then.
And you must like Derek Chisora and Dylan White.
I do. This is what I'm saying. That's the sort of stuff that tickles my fancy. You know what I mean? You know, I'm one of them sort of fighters. And no, man, I'm just an angry. I don't know. I don't want to say I'm an angry person, but I kind of am. Like, you know, I can be.
But it's so controlled, David, as well.
100% it's controlled.
That anger is brilliant. It's a focus.
Exactly.
It's a weapon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just in me. There ain't no nothing. You know, it's in me. There doesn't need to be no cameras around. There doesn't, none of that needs to be around. Sometimes I can come across in a certain way, but it's like, I don't know, man, I'm just an old school.
You need, having been involved for a long time, you need that in you to become a world champion.
Exactly.
To be there when you've had to maybe take the knee for 7 seconds and get up and win and knock them out. You need that.
You do. You need that little grit you got. Everyone needs that grit. And there's things that people have that you can't buy.
I dare say it. It's the willingness to put everything on the line, including your life, and embrace oblivion, isn't it? It's there in you. Well, I see it in you. I mean, at the times I've been around you and we've talked deeply.
That's what it is. I see it. 100%. You know? That's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and like me, I won't even talk to you, but listen, man, I'm a fighter, so let these fights happen and then we'll see what happens.
We've got another question here. If you could pick 3 current heavyweights to fight in the future, which would they be? Think money, legacy, glory, belts.
Usyk would be a good fight.
Yeah.
I'd like the Usyk. Obviously, ain't really for me yet, but if I had to choose something, Usyk.
Yeah, we're saying any time,
Wilder.
Yeah.
I'd love to fight Wilder with that right hand. See what it's like going there. I think I can upset him. So I'd say Wilder, Usyk. And you're saying at any time I could fight somebody, I'd love somebody like Evander. Because I love
Evander. You're saying back in time now, Evander, Evander Holyfield.
I love Evander Holyfield. I love him.
You have a bruising 12-round war with Evander Holyfield.
Can you imagine that?
Amazing,
man. So something like Evander Holyfield. But you talk about, I've got to say a fighter now.
Is there another one now?
Another one right now. So I'd say Wilder.
If you fight Wilder and Usyk, I reckon that you can buy maybe a couple of properties on Portobello Road.
I think so too.
They're all a cool. They're all a cool million at the moment. Come on, one other. Is it Fury? Is it Joshua? Is there something about you that you can't fight Joshua for some reason?
No, Joshua's my guy. It's just, Joshua would be, imagine that. Me and Joshua both in good nick. It'll probably be, Joshua would be a good one.
Do it back on Victoria Island in Lagos?
Yeah. Imagine that. All the aunties and uncles there watching it.
Chaos in Lagos, me and Addy Aladipo call it.
I can't see myself, you know, I like him, but if I had to, 110, what? 110.
But he's not, I'm planting that. He's not the one you're picking in your mind.
No, so I think I'd choose... I'm trying to think of somebody because there's a lot of these American heavyweights as well. That'd be good fights, you know. I mean, like I said, obviously, the two people I mentioned, they both had their reasons. Fury's awkward. I've sparred him so many times that it's not one of them ones where, you know, if I never knew Fury and I never been in the ring with him, I'd always be like, man, I'd love to be in the ring with him.
Right.
And fight him to see what
but
it's
you've
like.
Been around him but so much. How many camps is
so
it?
So much. Like five.
Oh, right. So it's a lot of time around him. Yeah.
So
if he's around in 4 years' time, you might fight him.
Yeah, but he won't be around.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, he'll surf into the sunset, you know.
I agree.
He'll be long gone.
Daniel Dubois?
Dillian White.
You and Dillian is a good fight.
Mm-hmm. Maybe good. I like that fight. I like that fight a lot.
I can imagine the build-up being fairly fiery as well.
White, Wilder. All right,
lovely.
I can imagine that build-up being good, though.
Would you fight Fraser Clark? Someone's asking.
Yeah, but he's a punk, so I don't talk about him.
Oh, you think he's a punk, Fraser Clark?
I
thought you were friends.
We used to be.
What's gone wrong?
Friends. We were just more so. It was cordial.
Cordial, was it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's gone south, yeah?
Not necessarily south, but just the boy, he's just not a serious candidate. I don't know, man. He thinks the shit don't stink, so. Yeah.
Right, this is for both of us. Oh no, this is for you. Who do I think is better, Fabio Wardley or Fraser Clark? At the moment, I think it's Fabio Wardley.
Both good fighters.
Who wins out of that at the moment, if they met?
Fight. What would it go on a performance? I'll say Wardley. Wardley. I think Wardley actually does win. I think Wardley wins in quite some good fashion against him, if I'm being honest. I think Wardley.
We'll come to three favourite heavyweight fights ever in a minute. Who's the best prospect in boxing? I've got the young guy, Andy Cruz, that...
Is he Cuban?
Yeah, that Eddie Hearn signed. I've got Xander Zayas, the Puerto Rican, who's like 15, 19, 16...
20 years old.
Yeah, 20 years old. He was just on the Josh Taylor, Teofimo Lopez undercard. Yeah. Great kid. Yeah. Then I'd say over here... for me, you're beyond a prospect anyway. Yeah. I'd say Caroline Dubois and Lauren Price in the women. I think they're both extraordinarily talented. Dalton Smith, you can throw in there as well, but he's kind of beyond prospect now. He was very good at the weekend, by the way, against Sam Maxwell. Two cuts on Dalton Smith's eyes, went to work and stopped Maxwell.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
He's got a lot about him at 140 pounds. Have you got a prospect out there that you like the look of?
I mean, I look at all of them because there's always, you know what boxing is like. You always want to see people. And then, you can be the top of the tree and you can still learn something of somebody just coming in. That's always the case. But in terms of prospects, like you just said, the people I do kind of look at are on the same sort of level and up. So none of those are really, really prospects. But you mentioned some names there that was actually interesting. I've actually seen an Andy Cruz guy fight, though.
Very talented. Xander fight. Yeah, Xander's good. Trying too hard with this power at the moment, which is something that heavyweights like yourself kind of struggle with sometimes, where you know how much power you've got, and it's waiting for the moment, isn't it?
It's waiting for the moment because you know you've got the power to stop anyone, but with maturity, you know, comes wisdom, so you kind of start to use it to your advantage.
Yeah.
But like you said, going back to any of my sort of prospects, there's no one that actually stands out that I'd look at.
In heavyweight?
Yeah. I think, I like what he does there.
Are you the best prospect in heavyweight boxing right now?
Yeah. At my level, 110%. I'd say me, Jared. Yeah. Because I feel like with everyone else, there's like a ceiling. Kind of know how far they're going to go. Me and Jared, I think we're going to go the whole way.
Do you think you'll end up fighting him for the world title one day?
Yeah, but the way
have you planted that in your mind?
But the way things are going out and whatnot, and the way things are planning, then it's more than likely going to happen. 110%. Dubois is obviously there already. Dubois is a good fighter as well. So, yeah.
Three favorite heavyweight fights ever. I've got a list of them here that I put together. By the way,
I'd say Ali against Cleveland Williams.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Such talent that day. Moving like a featherweight, wasn't he? Yeah.
That's a very good fight.
Yeah.
I'd say I liked Evander Holyfield, Riddick Bowe. And I love Anna Holyfield, George Foreman. That fight there, man.
George was 45 then, yeah, or 43.
Yeah, Anna Holyfield was still one of his toughest fights.
Yeah.
That he ever had.
Yeah.
And you watch the people in the 90s put their punches together. They were different sort of fighters. The people hit with bad intentions.
So Holyfield and Tyson, some of their fights as well.
I like Holyfield Tyson with the whole ear biting. I mean, this is what I mean. Of course, that's not on, but could you imagine a fighter doing that now? License gone, everything gone, and
yeah, but know. But it's still, you expect the unexpected in boxing. We do not know.
Yeah,
you know, we do not know.
It's true.
I don't really want to see. I mean, it's hard to ear bite with you because they're so small. But
why are you laughing for?
Our production team in the gallery.
Why are you laughing? Yeah,
David, leave them alone. We'll sort them out afterwards. George Foreman, Ron Lyle, Riddick Bone, Evander Holyfield, we said. Jack Dempsey and Louis Firpo. Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali, the fight of the century, 1971, New York. Ali and Frazier in Manila in 75. The Rumble, the Thriller in Manila. Lennox Lewis and Vitaly Klitschko was a great fight.
I swear to you, I was thinking he was going to say that was a...
It was brilliant.
Klitschko to that fight on 2 weeks' notice.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? Yeah.
2 weeks' notice. I remember he was getting crazy after the fight got stopped.
I'm also going to add one. I've been at one or two of these, but also add Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder 1 in Los Angeles when Fury got up in the 12th round. It was just unbelievable. And you can't even believe it when you watch it back.
Still can't believe it when you watch
it back. No, you just can't believe it. It was freaky.
Even the story going into that fight was even better. How Fury's dad...
leaving 10 stone and...
Exactly. His dad didn't want to do it. He just came back in August to fight the hardest puncher in December. You know, everyone bit him off.
Mental health issues, suicidal.
Yeah.
Can you believe he was 28 stone and or 29 stone nearly, and he came back? I went to see him in Marbella when he was 28 and a half stone, when he was training, first of all, with Ben Davison and Billy Joe Saunders. I went for a jog on the beach with him. It was easy.
Yeah.
It was easy. He was only doing like 3 miles an hour. You know, it was... But he was 28 stone. I could not believe how big he was when I got there.
Yeah.
I had a fantastic interview with him. And what a journey back over those 2 years. A couple more questions for you that I've got to ask. What's your opinion about, if it happens, Tyson Fury fighting MMA fighters? If it happens against Francis Ngannou, it's rumoured at the moment. We don't know if it's definitely happening.
It's not a boxing contest because he's the top of the tree, Tyson. So it's not going to happen. I mean, in the exhibition, it's still going to be interesting to watch.
We'll all watch it, won't we?
We'll all watch it to see what's going to happen. But
might not be what we want right now.
I was going to say, it's not what we want right now. We'd rather see him against the Usyk.
Yeah. Do you think that fight will happen?
Don't know. Because I know they was talking about Usyk probably fighting Hergovic at the end of the year. Because Tyson's going to be fighting.
Defending the IBF. So mandatory, yeah.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. Do you think Daniel Dubois gets beaten by Usyk then?
Yeah. But it's still going to be a good fight because I don't know about Daniel's. I don't think Daniel's got IQ like that. So, and he ain't the smartest. I mean, he ain't the sharpest tool in the box. So he might go in there and, you know, sometimes you being not that smart can work in your favour. You know, when you're doing certain things, it just works good for you. But I'm pretty sure they've sparred each other before.
Yeah.
So they kind of both know what to expect going in there.
Final question. If you could sit down with any heavyweight from history around a dinner table and you could choose three to ask them about their careers and give you advice for yours, which three heavyweights would you have around a table with you for dinner?
Ali, 110%. Evander Holyfield and Mike Tyson.
I knew you'd say Mike Tyson. What is it? You've mentioned Holyfield, you've mentioned Ali. Obviously, Ali is amazing.
100%.
I've always seen you as someone that would have an affinity with Mike Tyson.
I feel like he would get me if when I tell him certain things that seems crazy to everyone else.
Yeah.
I might say some things that might be, that's a bit peculiar. Why would he think that? Why does he think like this? But I see Tyson kind of understanding me, and you know.
And particularly like understanding you now in his 50s.
Exactly.
Where he was and where you are.
Exactly that, because he will probably be thinking, I see a lot of myself in you, you know. I'd like to see where he was at, where he was my age, and, you know, Yeah, Mike Tyson's son had asked a lot of questions, you know.
You got to go and...
we got to make it happen.
Mike Tyson, if you see this, Frank Warren, if you see this, George Warren, if you see
Let's
this.
Let's make it happen.
Big D.
George, where you at?
Mike Tyson.
100%, let's Big do D. it. Big
D, sitting down together. I'll be there, happy to listen to it.
100%,
love to,
man.
Love to watch you and him talking.
Yeah. You know, I saw him in Saudi. We was both in the Prince's house.
Oh, Tommy Fury and Jake Paul.
We was in the Prince's house.
Yeah.
The Prince invited us all over for food and whatnot. Shout out David Chisora because he made that happen as well. But yeah, I remember I
did. Did you want to go over and speak?
I wanted to, but because I idolized him and I respect him, I thought, you know what, let me not even disturb him.
He was sitting with the Furies eating, wasn't he?
He was actually on the table right next to me, yeah. So I was on this table, he was on that table. And you know, there's a saying, you never want to meet your idols because sometimes you might look at them differently. So I thought, I'm not going to disturb him. But he was a proper nice person. Everyone was going over to him asking for photos. Everyone was chilling, you know. And I thought, yeah, no, I'd leave him. And I was having my time as well. And I was chilling with the boys. So, yeah.
So it'd be brilliant for you to tune into who was the Iron Mike Tyson and who is now the kind of stoner.
More subdued.
Stoner. Yeah. Relaxed, wise. Living the zen of Mike Tyson, Mike Tyson.
Exactly.
He's Michael Tyson now, isn't he? Exactly. He really is. Exactly. But he puts out some wonderful wisdom now. Yeah. None of us believed when we were following him in the 80s that this was a guy that would even be around in the 2020s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly that. You know, nobody expects that. He's a humble man now. Even he talks about the sport. He doesn't talk about it with the same sort of fire. I suppose when you go through the wars and you go through what he went through, you're going to feel like that, you know. And that's what a lot of people don't realise. So that's why I got to give respect to people like Joshua, because I can kind of understand the sort of pressure he's got on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't. And the internet's quick to judge. Sometimes you've got to realise he's a man as well, man.
The world is quick to judge. And also, we've always said it, those of us in the sport, we might be critical of his opponents, of his performances, but he's a game changer for our sport. He's really changed the last decade.
I think they said something along the lines of, I remember before Joshua was boxed on Sky Sports, I think the viewing figures were like 100,000 on Sky Sports, 150,000.
Yeah.
Joshua started boxing and then they went to
the millions.
It's literally that.
Yeah.
Straight away.
Yeah.
And, Josh, in the beginning of his career, was getting like 400,000 viewers tuning into his fight on Sky Sports.
Yeah.
And big world title shots was getting 150,000. So it was like, he changed the sport. He brought a lot of eyes to the sport. Started doing pay-per-view, breaking records with pay-per-view. So he had pressure on his shoulders from early. And he dealt with it good. You know, he's human. So, yeah.
That's respect out of the ring, full on in it. That's...
No, 110%. And that's why I am who I am. You know, man, like, put the pressure on my shoulders, I'm going to deal with it. I got bullock shoulders. You know what I mean? And I got a big head, so when you give me that crown and make sure it was heavy, I can deal with it all. I like it, you know. So,
Big D, I'm Big G. You're watching Fight Club. Joe Gallagher.
That's it.
What's next? Well, I'm delighted to say that joining us is two-time Boxing News Trainer of the Year, Ring Magazine Trainer of the Year, extraordinary character who has coached in so many amateur gyms up in the north. Tutor, of course, was the great Phil Martin. 30 years ago, of course, Joe got involved in all of this and was a boxer himself. Good morning, Joe. Looking very grey and bearded this morning.
Just like the Manchester weather at the moment, very grey. I've just done a session at Billy Denzin this morning, talented prospect we've got. And I'm just quickly nipping out now to get a quick coffee and then back in for another session later on with some of the lads.
No time for celebrating then early this week after a brilliant win for Natasha Jonas at the weekend in Manchester.
Yeah, no, we had a really good weekend. We had Natasha Jonas, obviously become a two-time world champion at two different weight divisions. First one from Liverpool to do that. And he also had Sean Yaxley. He went 13-0 at the weekend. He won the Celtic title and the IBO Intercontinental down in Wales. So good weekend for the gymnasium.
I'll come to all your fighters in a minute. But as I say, you've been involved for 30 years now in the sport. And you, as a young man...
A lot longer than that. I've been involved, what is it now, 44 years.
I'm coming to that.
Okay, started coaching when I was 23, 24. Yep. That was way back in 93.
Yeah.
Did the amateurs to 2001, got Foster to the world bronze. Then I got Joe Murray to the Olympics in 2008. I was already a pro then. So a pro, being a pro now, professional trainer, 20 odd years. Been involved at Champs Camp Moss Side since 86. So, yeah, it's a long time.
Well, I'm going to delve into you a little bit. You had 60 amateur fights yourself. Now, you're a tall man. You probably weigh in at cruiserweight these days, I'd say, something like that. As a young man who took up boxing at 11, you had 60 amateur bouts, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right.
What weight division? Were you a tall, lanky, super middle or something?
No, when I was boxing at Moss Side, that was in 87, I was 19. I was like a welterweight then. Welterweight, stroke come light middleweight. So I boxed in the boys' clubs championships. I got beat in the Northwest by a kid, a very good kid called Tony Costello.
Yeah.
He went on to the final and lost to a kid from Repton who was a very good fighter. So, I boxed abroad, boxed with Moss Side, Maurice Corr in Holland, and had around 40-odd schoolboy contests, around 16 senior contests, and yeah, that was it, really. And then I was bitten by the bug. Phil asked me if I wanted to take over the amateurs in, like, 1991 and coach them. As obviously, at that time, the professional side of Champs Camp was booming with, obviously, Frank Grant, Paul Burke, Carl Thompson, all them boys. And, I became Phil's understudy and had a great education underneath the man.
Any regrets that you didn't take it on further yourself?
No, not really. I was really wanting for it. When I finished school, I wanted to get into law or boxing. And then one day, my dad sat down, and I was always buying boxing news. And he said, look at all them ratings there. And at the time, it was like 600 boxers. And he just said to me, how many of them are millionaires? And at the time, like, obviously, there's like four or five, isn't there? Whoever the top ones at the time were, McGuigan, people like that. He says, you've either got to be able to fight or have some type of gimmick, or you're able to punch like Bruno. And that basically summed it up for me then. So stop wasting your time with it and crack on. So, yeah, that taught me out of it, to be honest.
So you're clearly, you're a multimillionaire now, yeah?
Pardon?
But you're a multimillionaire now.
No, far from it, mate. Don't believe that hype. No problem.
David Adelaide's in the studio with me. You watch everyone in boxing. Have you got any advice for him? And what do you think, or where do you think he is headed? I'm very impressed with him.
No, listen, he's a good fight. We fought on a similar show down in York Hall when Callum Johnson fought, I think. And like anything with the big lads, I've just got to take the time. I did an interview the other day, because I just said I'm sick of talking about Dillon White and Derek Chisora now. They've been great servants. They need to move on and let the young lads come through, your Jared Andersons, the likes of David there, and let them kids come through and let people be talking about the next generation of fighters coming through and build up their profile and give them the column space and the airtime. And because a lot of people don't know about them, Hugh Fury, another one. There's some good fighters coming through, and we really need to say to the lads that are there now, listen, you've had your time. It's like Joshua Dillon White. Who wants to watch that? Do you know what I mean? It's just absolutely killing and stopping the progression of fighters like David and other heavyweights there coming through that want to be moved quicker, but can't, because it's being held up at the top end with people that have had the time a little bit. But like I say, all good things come to those who wait, and the cream always rises to the top.
Do you agree with that, David?
I get what you're saying fully.
Yeah, that are being held up.
Yeah, certain fighters need to be made. Waiting for certain fighters, like people at the top of the tree, is just going to take a long, long time. Like he said, I think the young generation are starting to kind of come through, but you can only go so far when the people at the top are moving a certain way.
Have you had to tell some of your fighters in the past, maybe people like Tasha Jonas, by the way, just be patient and it will come in time, Joe?
Tasha was one, obviously. She fought Terry, then Cater, and then was sort of like really kicked to the curb, really, and was forgotten about. And it was just a case of always having that belief with her, sticking with it. And I think signing up with Sky and Boxer and having an arm around her and just doing what she asked, which was go and get them and I'll deal with them. And that's what she has done. And I think I did a social media post last night to say, listen, Natasha's achieved so much, but I still don't think she's been given her flowers. I think she's an unbelievable athlete. People forget what she's achieved as an amateur. She was the first one to qualify for the 2012 Olympics, a British female. And I just still feel that she still isn't getting her flowers, as I say. There's something somewhere where I feel, wow, for she's changed. She turned 39 last week, the week before last, a mum. She does so much work to do with put weapons down, gloves up. She played the charity match on Sunday at football with it. She goes, talks to loads of schools. The work she does at grassroots level goes right under the radar, doesn't get talked about. And it's just, like I'm saying, give the girl a due, for God's sake. What more does she have to do? Do you know what I mean? She won the Boxer of the Year award, Ring Magazine, 4 world titles and 4 world title fights. And the British Boxing Board, what more does the kid have to do to get the accolades and the appreciation? I know a lot of people close to her really expect it, but I just don't feel it's still forthcoming with her. And it's not necessarily, I know I can be difficult. It isn't necessarily old Gallagher complaining. No, it's not. I'm just going what's before and what people have had before. I just give it Tasha now. Do you know what I mean? Don't hold back. Give it her. And the kid, listen, it's not like she's not from Tartford. Her sister plays for England, Nikita.
Yes.
Her brother plays for Liverpool under 21s. Her other brother is in the PFL. They're a massive sporting family. Mm. And like I say, for her to be kicked to the curb 3 years ago and now to be like number one in the world and 2-weight world champion, that's an unbelievable comeback story. And like you say, Anthony Crawler was another one. He lost early on in his career. He lost to an ice cream man, had a few setbacks. Surely you just got to persevere.
Yeah.
And consistency is key. That's the key word, consistency. Getting up, doing the same things every day.
And being ready, I'd say. And being ready when the opportunity comes, yeah. There's been a bit of criticism over Savannah Marshall. Obviously, you were there with Tasha on Saturday night. I was there with Talk Sports, and there's been quite a lot of criticism of the level of fighting, boxing, that we saw between Savannah Marshall and Fanchon Cruz-Dizern on Saturday night. Do you think that's unfair, given that styles make fights and Savannah just kind of met her in the middle in what I'd call an old Victorian fairground duel in lots of ways between two big heavyweight women, as I'd like to call them?
I think Savannah Marshall, no matter what she did the other night, should have got stick for. The main thing, obviously, she's come back after her first career loss, and she was going in with Cruz, who was an undisputed world champion. The person that beat Savannah was shouting ringside, and I'm sure Savannah could hear that, and they're doing everything to unsettle Savannah. But Savannah, like Peter said, Cruz turned it into a dogfight. Cruz wasn't going to come and box. She was coming to him, turn it into a dogfight, her type of fight, and she nearly did it. But Savannah, like I said to you, sooner or later, she was going to have to go into the pocket and fight with her. And she did that, and she came out the winner. And it was a very good win for Savannah Marshall against Cruz, moving up a weight division. Would she beat Clarissa in a rematch? Well, that's something we'd all like to see. Personally, I don't think so. I just think Clarissa Shields is just something that's just on another level. I really do feel...
Tasha and Clarissa, then? What about Tasha and Clarissa?
Well, Tasha Clarissa, now I'm not saying Tasha beats Clarissa, but I'm saying I'm open for the fight of Tasha versus Clarissa at 147.
Or 154?
147, Clarissa said she'll come down.
Yep, she did.
So if she can come down to 147, then we'll do it. It'll be hard for her to do 147, but she's put that out there. And like I said to you on the night, go and get the contract. We'll sign that now. I think Natasha's skill set is good, but like I said to you, I'm a huge fan of Clarissa Shields, and Listen, it'd be good to have her here over again, either fighting Savannah or Natasha. I'd love Natasha to fight Katie again, Mia. That's a fight that I'm harbouring for. They've been rivals since 2011 and the Olympics. And then when they fought in Manchester, it was behind closed doors. And I think them two, the rivalry, one last dance. It doesn't really need world titles, to be honest. Catch weight, and the two of them to have the farewell fight. This time with a crowd at the arena would be packed out, 20,000 sold out. I think that'd be a great fitting end to both Katie and Natasha Jonas' careers.
Final one, Joe. Have you got a prospect that the public might not have heard about too much at the moment who you believe will go on to the very top?
I've got a few, to be honest. That's not me just being blasé, but I'm being excited. I've got a few. Yeah, so got a kid called Josh Holmes. He's a very talented kid. He's 11-0, just had a good win. Billy Denz, a light heavyweight, 8-0. He's the Turkish Tyson. He's a good kid coming through. Clark Smith, I think he's 4-0, 5-0, light middleweight. Looks like Canelo. Canelo sent him a good luck message on his pro debut. I think these two or three kids over the next 2 or 3 years will be the ones to keep Manchester boxing going.
Brilliant, Joe. Thank you so much for joining us. I know how busy you are, and we shall speak to you very soon.
Cheers. No problem. Thanks for having me on. Good luck, David.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
No problem, my man.
Well, Joe Gallagher there saying the right things, which is about, we've talked about it all day in the show, about being patient, about being ready.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, time and experience is the greatest teacher. You can't beat that. And like you said, patience, you know, we're young, we're coming through. So it's all about the right time, and, you know, good timing beats everything.
So when are you out next? Do you know? Have you got a vague idea when you're going to be out?
Back in the summer. Yeah, I'm in the gym all the time anyways, but yeah, I'll be back in the summer.
On a Fury card?
I have no idea. We've
got to wait on and Joyce see. And Jang?
We've got to wait and see.
Come on, you're going to be on a heavyweight card. Or is it time you started headlining?
That's a wait and see.
Are you not tapping on Frank's door every day and George Warren's door every day?
I mean, you know, they know what's best. BT Sports know what's best. What should I say? It's TNT Sports. But yeah, you know, I leave it to them. I just stay in the gym. When I get the call, I'm ready.
Right, ask everybody this who comes into the studio. I don't know if you're married, engaged, whether you've got a girlfriend, whether you do a David Hay and live in a throuple. I don't know. Yeah? But you're marooned on a desert island. Yeah? Who's your girl Friday? Who do you have with you on the desert island? Your dream girl on the desert island.
My dream girl?
On the desert island, yeah. Don't get yourself in trouble here, by the way.
Yeah, that's what I'm not really going to say. No, I know who I know. I've got a dream girl that I'd be on that island. But you want me to say the name? Or?
Absolutely, because we're going to pop a picture up of her on the show. Here she is. Who is it? You can do your top 10 if you want.
Well, top 10? Not obviously. It's like, hey, God damn, what's going on here, man? Girls, show me. Yeah.
Come on.
So, what, celebrities were like,
yeah, whoever you just a, got, just, got just a throw baby right now. I have you, yeah. Well, you're gonna have to have your partner and your baby.
My baby girl's gotta be up there, you know what I mean? But if I'm talking about celebrities,
yeah, maybe someone that do the cooking for you, or for you and your partner and the baby, or someone that would sing for you.
Oh, no, I ain't got no kids.
Oh, you haven't got, oh, but okay.
I mean, I've got a baby in terms of like, yeah.
Okay, okay. Well, you can't upset her by saying you want to go, you want Naomi Campbell there, or
I ain't got no kids yet, not yet. Yeah. But number one's got to be Alicia Keys.
Okay.
Number one's Alicia Keys.
Huge fan?
Yeah, I like her music.
Yeah.
I like her looks better, but I like her music.
Don't come on the show and get yourself in trouble. I say that to everybody. Big Mo, the announcer, the other day, who works for Sky and Boxer, he wanted two. He had two girls on. Yeah, I was like, fair enough. But he hasn't got a baby right now. Oh, so, right. Yeah. You've done right, David. At David Alley on Twitter and Instagram. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today, David. Big D,
that's what they call me, but it's been a pleasure. Gareth said my surname wrong, so that's crazy, but...
Adalay?
Yeah.
How did I say it?
You said Alley.
No. No.
It's all good, though, because I know he knows my surname. He knows where I'm from in Nigeria and whatnot. So.
Yeah, well, it's an amazing place. As I said earlier, it's brilliant to travel there myself as a teenager.
Yeah.
It was different back then.
Nostalgic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely nostalgic.
Can't go wrong.
You've been watching Fight Club with me, Gareth Davis. My thanks to David Allay. Correct?
There's no, you always say the D.
Okay. You've been watching Fight Club with me, Gareth A. Davis. My thanks to David Adelaide, Joe Gallagher, and Stephen Taylor Heath for a fantastic episode 4. Join us next time. Don't forget, we want all your questions, all your thoughts on the show. And in the next couple of weeks, I have Eddie Hearn, Ben Shalom, and Carl Froch joining me in the studio. But none of them is bigger than Big D. Fight Club.
That's right.
We'll see you next time.
Podcast Network.